Welcome to Today's Local Environment, the Compliance Podcast, brought to you by LGEN, the Local Government Environmental Assistance Network. LGEN is a first-stop shop providing local governments with user-friendly information on compliance with federal environmental regulations, funding strategies, and tools for advancing healthy and sustainable communities for all. Brought to you by the Environmental Law Institute under a cooperative agreement with the United States Environmental Protection Agency. ELI makes law work for people, places, and the planet.
My name is Carol Bailey, and I am the Grant Project Officer for this cooperative agreement, and I work within the Office of Enforcement and Compliance Assurance with EPA headquarters. Today, we're joined by Mike Wilson and the Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Pollution Prevention and Toxics to discuss what local governments and community members should know about the lead renovation, repair, and painting rule, which protects residents, especially children, from lead poisoning. Thank you so much for being here today, Mike.
And thank you for the opportunity to discuss such an important topic.
First off, let's set the stage for this. Lead has been used in a number of products, from leaded gasoline to pipes and plumbing materials. Critically, lead-based paint is present in many houses, apartments, and other buildings where we and our children live, work, and play. While lead-based paint is no longer used, you and I can be exposed when an older building, especially one built before 1978, is renovated, creating lead dust and debris that children can ingest, that then makes its way into their bloodstream. This is where the lead renovation, repair, and painting rule, the RRP rule, comes in, laying out several requirements when it comes to renovating homes, childcare facilities, and preschools built before 1978. This is an important issue for many municipalities. On one level, governments are directly regulated under the rule when they renovate municipally owned buildings, but on a wider scale, local governments have a duty to protect residents from lead poisoning, and as we'll learn, they can do that as a part of licensing contractors and issuing building permits. Mike, why don't you start off by explaining just why this is such a critical issue of health and safety and why local governments should prioritize compliance in this area?
Sure. Before 1978, it was common to use paint that contained lead in buildings. And the older the building, the more likely that the paint contained lead. 87% of buildings built before 1940 are likely to contain some lead-based paint. Renovation, repair, and painting projects that disturb painted surfaces can create dust and endanger occupants. Exposure to lead has the most devastating impact on children and pregnant women, affecting their fetuses, because their bodies are growing quickly. Lead is extremely toxic, especially for children. Lead entering the bloodstream can lead to lower IQ, behavioral and developmental problems, impaired learning, anemia, and impacts to hearing.
That's terrible.
Yes, and it's not only children who are affected. Lead can also harm adults, including construction workers, as well as city employees and members of the public who live in, work at, or visit city-owned or managed buildings. Think about the ways anyone can come in contact with lead-based paint in any building. For example, when we open and close windows and doors, or as paint deteriorates. The Consumer Product Safety Commission banned the residential use of lead-based paint in 1978, but these buildings are still in use. That's why it's so important to make sure to clean up these hazards, especially in homes and buildings that are occupied by children. And that's why the EPA adopted the RRP rule. It was first issued in 2008 and has been updated several times over the years. It applies to paint disturbing work done for compensation in homes and child occupied facilities built before 1978. For projects subject to the rule, lead-based paint is assumed to be present, and a contractor would need to follow the RRP rule requirements unless the paint has been tested and found to be free of lead-based paint.
Let's talk about the RRP rule now. Could you break it down for us? What are the main requirements for renovators, and how does meeting them help mitigate the dangers of lead-based paint?
There are four main requirements. Get training and become certified. Educate your customers and residents on the dangers of lead. follow lead safe work practices while you are working and properly dispose of waste, and keep good records to show you have been responsible and in compliance.
Okay, that sounds pretty straightforward. Can we run through each of the four for our audience in a bit more depth?
The first requirement is training and certification. That means firms doing work subject to RRP, even an individual working as a sole proprietorship, must be certified. For each job, the firm must assign a certified renovator. A renovator becomes certified by completing a training in lead safe work practices provided by an EPA or an authorized state accredited training provider. Remaining workers must also be trained. They can either be certified renovators or be taught lead safe work practices on the job by a certified renovator. The certified renovator assigned to the project must supervise the work, provide on-the-job training as needed, and prepare the required documentation.
Got it. Now, the second requirement is about educating customers and residents, right?
That's right. The RRP regulation requires the firm performing work to educate their customers and residents on the dangers of lead. For example, before a job, materials explaining the hazards of lead-based paint must be distributed to the owner and an adult occupant, if not owner-occupied. EPA makes this very easy by preparing all this information in a pamphlet titled Renovate Right. If you're renovating common areas of multifamily housing, and that includes public housing, by the way, you must distribute the pamphlet to all occupants or post informational signs telling people how to get the pamphlet. The Renovate Right pamphlet is available in several languages, and you can download it from EPA's website.
Which makes complying with this requirement pretty straightforward, too. What about the third one, lead safe work practices?
Sure. This means work practices that will keep dust and chips from lead-based paint containing and not allow it to spread outside the work area. It also means not using work practices such as power sanding without a shroud, an attached HEPA vacuum, or using a heat gun above 1100 degrees Fahrenheit, since these tools will spread lead dust. And all the waste from the renovation must be contained and secured so that dust and debris are not released. The rule gets into details about specific practices, like how to protect objects in certain areas with plastic sheeting, both indoors and outside. You also need to dispose of all debris in a specified safe manner using heavy-duty trash bags and conduct a visual inspection. All the details are in the rule, and we make it clear in the compliance assistance webpage we put together.
And anyone undertaking renovation or repair work on buildings needs to keep records of all these things: certification, training, educating residents, proper disposal, and so on?
Absolutely. Good record keeping is the fourth requirement. This includes keeping copies of the certified renovator's training certificates, for example. For each job, you will need to retain various documentation, like who the certified renovator was, details of any testing or inspections, proof you provided the owner and occupants with the pre-renovation education, and so on.
In a nutshell, then, the four requirements, if I recall correctly, are training and certification, informing owners and occupants, lead safe work practices, and good record keeping. That's all?
That's all. Those four requirements, and EPA provides many helpful resources to guide you through each one, including the Renovate Right pamphlet, sample forms, and checklists.
Thank you for listening to the show. Before we return to today's local environment, the Compliance Podcast, a reminder that you can find a variety of user-friendly tips, funding resources, and other tools for ensuring your community complies with federal environmental regulations by visiting lgene.net. And now, back to the show.
Pivoting a bit, Mike, can you tell us more about the specific roles local governments can play here? The first thing that comes to my mind, which we've touched on a bit, is that most local governments own or lease their own buildings, don't they? And that they could include schools, recreation centers, public housing, office buildings where city employees spend most of their day, right?
Exactly. If cities or towns have older buildings that need maintenance work or renovations, they need to follow the rule if any of these are housing or occupied by children, such as schools and daycare centers. On a high level, local governments have public health responsibilities. Lead is a very serious health problem in some cities with children and adults who have blood lead poisoning. The best solution is prevention.
Which is an excellent point. Now, how exactly can local governments promote compliance with the RRP?
Well, in addition to following the RRP rule for all work performed in their own buildings, local governments can help prevent blood lead poisoning by helping ensure that contractors know about and comply with the RRP rule. For one thing, local governments usually issue building permits and may also issue contractor licenses. City staff can reach out to these businesses at the point where they have contact with them.
So, for example, when contractors apply for a building permit or renew their contractor license?
Precisely. If the city or county has just a short paragraph and a link to this compliance assistance information, it would be an excellent way to help ensure that all building contractors know about the RRP rule and can find clear information on how to comply. In fact, some local governments require RRP firm certification prior to obtaining permits.
Which is a great segue into talking about how EPA recently made available an incredibly helpful new resource on the RRP rule. Can you tell us a bit about why EPA developed this compliance assistance?
Sure. Unfortunately, EPA regions have been finding a lot of non-compliance with the RRP rule recently, and we've been taking quite a few enforcement actions. So we wanted to take a look and see if we could make the information on the requirements for the RRP rule more clear. In short, we summarized all the requirements in clear language and provided links to additional assistance and helpful tools on the EPA's website, as well as to the states and tribes that run their own RRP programs.
Where can our listeners access this guidance?
They can find this information at CICA, C-I-C-A Center, .org/ledrrp.php. And the link should be up on the LGN site too. CICA Center is the Construction Industry Compliance Assistance Center. This site serves as an easy to understand roadmap to help contractors find everything they need to know and all the information resources they will need. The site also tells you exactly where to find the Renovate Right pamphlet.
Are there other resources and information available on the RRP rule?
There are several. EPA developed a small entity compliance guide, which details the rule's training and certification requirements. There's also an online search tool to locate training, course, or providers near you, as well as information about how a firm applies for certification and renewals. Other documents like the Renovate Right pamphlet and sample forms to document distribution of the Renovate Right pamphlet are also available. In addition, there is information on lead test kits and laboratories, a sample form for documenting any lead test, plus a sample record keeping checklist that is only one page long. Links to all this information is available on the CICA Center RRP rule page.
So EPA takes childhood lead poisoning very seriously and sees community awareness as vital in addressing the problem. What do you want communities to know about how to work with their local governments to ensure that they are protected from lead?
Community members will do best if they understand the issues, the possible sources of lead poisoning, how people can be exposed to lead, and what can be done to prevent it. It's important to know that often the oldest housing stock in a city, if it has not been maintained or updated, will most likely have lead-based paint and other hazards. EPA has a really helpful webpage called Protect Your Family from Sources of Lead. That's linked on the LGN webpage. It discusses the different sources of lead, paint, soil, products, and drinking water. You can take this information and discuss what can or should be done with your local government. Since lead poisoning is a health issue, your public health department may be a good place to start. A lead inspection and lead risk assessment are useful first steps, which can lead to more thoughtful decisions on managing lead-based paint and other lead hazards.
Mike, what other resources are available to local governments and their communities looking for more ways to address lead, especially communities with a large amount of older housing stock?
EPA has a lot of great information on our website, including links to CDC data on the number of children with elevated blood lead levels in your area. The site is Learn About Lead, also linked from the Elgene site. If a child has elevated blood lead levels, lead paint abatement may be warranted. Lead abatement is designed to permanently eliminate lead-based paint or lead-based paint hazards. Abatement is sometimes ordered by a state or local government and can involve specialized techniques. So EPA requires individuals and firms who perform abatements to be certified and follow specific work practices.
Since we're about out of time, Mike, what is the CECA Center RRP rule page again?
It is CECACenter, all one word, .org/leadrrp.php.
Needless to say, lead will continue to be a presence in so many of our homes and neighborhoods for years to come, but local governments and communities can work together to be informed about the issue and ensure they undertake activities like renovation as safely and as responsibly as possible. Thank you, Mike, for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And to our audience, you can access more podcasts and resources, including On Lead and Other Toxic Substances such as Asbestos and Mercury on the Elgene website and at elgene.net. Until next time, thank you for joining us here at Elgene and the Environmental Law Institute.
Thank you for listening to Today's Local Environment, the Compliance Podcast, a podcast brought to you by Elgene, the Local Government Environmental Assistance Network. Visit us at elgene.net and on social media for user-friendly tips, funding resources, and other tools ensuring your community complies with federal environmental regulations. And please, take our latest survey while you're there. Together, we can advance healthy and sustainable communities for all.